in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours and beyond, the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet. Thanks to Broadcast.com for the wonderful distribution and, of course, the Intel Corporation for the G2 program, which allows this incredible ability of yours to go to my website at www.artbell.com, download the G2 program, put it into your computer, come back, click on streaming video, and you will see the program in progress as well as hear it. And the audio is excellent. Coming up in a moment, The X-Files, Chris Carter. This is one I've been waiting for a while, and I'm really looking forward to. I want to know, for one thing, where he gets these ideas, don't you? They seem to brush so close to reality. And sometimes you have to just wonder about the source a little bit. Listen, I just got a report, a very serious report, from Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, and two large commercial airliners in the southern tier of the United States, and we're not going to break it down any further than that because we want to get the FAA report, so we're not going to specifically say where, have sighted a monstrous triangle. Now, I repeat, two large commercial heavies jets have sighted a gigantic triangle going at a spectacular speed, and it was described as monstrous, and those are commercial pilots reporting that, folks, so there's a lot going on in the skies tonight. You might keep your eyes peeled. Also, check my website. I'm going to leave it up there for about 30 minutes. I took a picture last night of the moon, which I'm kind of proud of. And I did it with a raw video camera and just went out there and snapped it at the right time and happened to catch it. It's not easy to do when you're zoomed in that far. Take a look on the studio cam. I'll leave it up there for about a half hour. A picture of the full moon. I've never done that before, and I thought it was pretty cool. Take a look-see. Anyway, there's a lot going on in our skies. You'll be hearing more about that, but I wanted to get the news to you right away. Now, Chris Carter, in 1992, multi-award-winning producer Chris Carter began creating and developing television projects for 20th Century Fox, including The X-Files, entering now its seventh season. The worldwide cultural phenomenon has won an Emmy Award and three Golden Globe Awards for Best Television Drama. Since its inception, this series has garnered a total of 53 Emmy Award nominations. Carter wrote and served as a producer on the series' first feature film, The X-Files, which I saw, which I'm sure most of you did, released in the summer of 98. That made over $185 million worldwide. The second installment of that feature film, a series, is currently in the planning stages. So another movie's coming. His writing, additionally, has garnered him an Emmy Award and Writers Guild nomination. As a director, Carter has received an Emmy nomination, award nomination, and three Directors Guild of America nominations. In 1996, he was named by Time magazine as one of the 25 most influential people in America. In addition to The X-Files, Carter also created and served as executive producer of the Fox series Millennium. Previously, Carter had a development deal with Walt Disney Pictures. Here is Chris Carter. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. The
bad news of the day, of course, is that your newest child, Harsh Realm, has been treated very harshly and canceled after one, two, three episodes.
Right.
Sorry to hear it.
So am I.
Actually, even more than sorry to hear it, almost kind of angry. Now, this is not directed at Fox in particular, but it's directed at all the networks. I told you just before we got on the air, I was a big fan of Married with Children, and it ran for a year, over a decade ago, with bad reviews and bad ratings, and then it became a giant hit that was on the air for better than a decade, and now they're making decisions after three episodes. I mean, that's incredible to me. What can you say about that?
Well, it is to me as well, because I've produced over 200 hours of television for Fox, and the show, granted, didn't perform as well ratings-wise as they would have hoped, as I would have hoped, but my personal polling places where I have people who are brutally honest with me, everyone liked the show. All the indicators were good that it was, in fact, good work and could find an audience, but they just, for reasons that were political, creative, financial, and probably have more to do with what's going on at the Fox Network right now, I think they pulled the plug.
So when you say political, you mean within the network, the politics within the network itself, or is there any outside influence possibly involved?
No, it's really internal.
Internal. I guess Friday nights were having a rough time of it anyway, weren't they?
Yeah, it's a tough night of television, even though that's where The X-Files started originally and built an audience. But it's a tough night because the number of viewers is low. So even if you are a winner on Friday nights, you wind up in the big tally somewhere in the middle of the pack, even with winning scores. So it's a tough night of television. It can be a great night of television, but you really, really have to work to build an audience there.
Boy, though, I tell you, with your track record, it doesn't make sense to me that they would just arbitrarily so quickly cancel it. It's just very strange. You're working on a second X-Files movie, are you?
We're thinking about it.
You're thinking about it? Did the first one, it made $185 million. That's a lot of money, but they don't say how much you spent on it.
I think the total cost of the movie, just the production and everything involved in that, was something like $63 or $64 or $65 million.
Oh, well, then there'll be another one.
I think they've already spoken to me about it, of course, and I think it's just a matter of choosing what kind of story to tell.
The episode you've got coming up on November 7th, which is a very interesting date anyway, is entitled The Sixth Extinction.
Right.
Now, a lot of what you do and a lot of what I do parallel in a lot of areas, as you're well aware, I'm sure, that probably has something to do with why you had me on a Millennium episode, which we will talk about. But The Sixth Extinction, there have been rumors running all rampant across the internet of something that may not be so nice that might happen on November 7th. Now, they're probably nothing but rotten rumors, but it's interesting that you would pick that date for the first show and call it The Sixth Extinction. Are you aware of those rumors? Have you heard them?
In fact, you are the first person to tell me of these rumors.
I see.
Please tell me.
You don't want to know. It has something to do with astronomers and things that were seen during the some objects that were seen during the total eclipse that we had. And
right.
You know, it would be a show for you, believe me. What is the sixth extinction?
Well, there have been historically, I should say, prehistorically as well, five great extinctions in the history of the Earth, where a great number of the plant and animal species across time have died, including the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a predicted or projected sixth extinction by scientists, which we would fall victim to. And we play with this idea in the first and second episode of The X-Files.
Do you not wish to tell the audience from what quarter this extinction would come?
Well,
I understand you may not want to give too much away.
Well, I mean, everyone knows what we do on The X-Files and how we've dealt with extraterrestrial life in many forms, and we do here as well. We play with it in terms of its perhaps role in that extinction. and or capitalization on that extinction. So these things are all part of the storytelling that has been, you know, part of the 6 years going into the seventh.
Do you personally, underline personally, believe there is an ET presence on Earth or that we are being visited?
Well, it's funny because I've never, ever had an experience myself. I've never had an encounter, never seen a UFO, but I have some kind of instinctual sense that there is more, you know, to the world than meets the eye. And certainly, like even skeptics like Carl Sagan believe that the odds are too great to discount it.
You may have heard the beginning of the show just before you came on. I said two commercial airline pilots, heavies, you know, 747 type pilots in the southern tier of the U.S., have sighted a giant black triangle moving, and they said monstrous, actually, I think that was the word they used, traveling at an incredible speed. It's pretty hard to ignore those kind of reports.
Every time I get on a commercial airliner, I ask the pilots if they've ever seen a UFO, and the flight attendants, for that matter.
Do they ever say they have?
Almost always they say they have.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or now, if they haven't, they have a friend who, you know, is works in the airline business who has.
You graciously invited me to go and do a Millennium episode,
right.
And it was a really interesting episode. And I've had a gal named Joyce Raleigh on who's talked about the Gulf War disease, and specifically Microplasma incognitus is the name of the disease that they think is caused, may be causing this problem, and that's what she's talked about. And when I received the original script, I recall getting about five or six scripts, but the first one that came actually came with the name Microplasma incognitus. And alarm bells went off all over the place in my head. And I thought, holy smokes, they're going to actually do a program on this. And when I got up there, at about the fourth script or so, the name had been changed to something else. I sort of presumed in my own mind a political decision of some kind.
It probably wasn't. It was probably more of a science advisor pushing us in another direction, because we are, I'd say, mostly immune to any kind of political or certainly politically correct pressure exerted on us.
Well, I was getting ready to be another question, but I'll phrase it a little differently. Have you had any direct or indirect contact with anybody at NASA, JPL, or ESA?
You know, I've been to various functions where I'll have people approach me and they'll tell me that they work in certain levels of government classified areas, and tell me, ask me where I get my information, because they'll say, you don't know how close you are. But the truth is that I'd say more often than not, although we're sort of voracious readers and scavengers of the material, that we are really just creators of fiction and using all of the materials that come to us and creating fictions based on what are putative facts, I think.
It's too close, Chris. Even I can't believe that. Have you ever used information from any of those sources in your stories?
Well, not those sources in particular, but I'll sometimes hear stories. I was told there was a sound mixer, on set sound mixer, who told me a story about friends of the family who had a man who had hit sort of rock bottom and had become homeless. And he came back to his family and he said that he had his teeth hurt, that the aliens had been drilling his teeth, and the family thought he was a nut. And they took him to the dentist, and the dentist came back out into the waiting room and said, your brother, or whoever it was, has holes drilled in his teeth, microscopic holes, that he doesn't know that there is any tool that could have done that work. I love those kinds of stories. In fact, that's what became the an episode called Dwayne Barry in the second season, which was a big part of our mythology.
Well, I guess I've been doing this too long, but I have come to believe that there absolutely is something going on. I don't know what. Some of these aircraft obviously are experimental aircraft of ours, but then some obviously could not be.
Right.
And so I think we are being visited. And have any of these contacts of yours, you said, they've said things like you have no idea how close you are.
Right.
Could you relate to what? I mean, were they being specific at all in any area?
To classified information that has been collected and not disseminated, and that we've kind of has putting pieces, fragments of the truth or the or of fact together. We've sort of pieced it together in such a way that it is closer to a possibly a hidden truth.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you've ever been close enough that you've received a sort of a back channel subtle warning.
No, I've never actually had any warnings. I had a funny thing happen to me when we first started the X-Files. We were calling the FBI to get information on procedure and protocol, and they were answering our questions very happily and dutifully, and then all of a sudden they shut us and cut us off.
Oh?
And, well, we weren't even on the air then, so they didn't know. I was just some, you know, upstart Hollywood type. And they... As the show came close to air, probably 2 weeks from air, the FBI called in a kind of alarming way and said, "Who are you and why are you doing this?" And it was one of those sort of, you know, instant fears where you think that the ghost of J. Edgar Hoover is going to come and shut you down.
Well, they're not so obvious in the way they work, Chris. They're not so obvious. It can be in a lot more subtle ways. I mean, Harsh Realm is gone, but and we talk about a lot of things about why we think it might be gone, but maybe we don't truly know.
I hope you're right, Art.
You know, you sound a lot like Lance Henriksen. You've got that quality to your voice, a little bit of that quality to your voice. He was perfect in that part, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was the person I wrote it for. And no one else could have done it like he.
So you knew beforehand. When you approached him, did he have the same zeal?
Well, you know, he had turned me down on several attempts to get him to be on the X-Files. And so when I wrote this project for him, I didn't know that he would do it. And I ended up having someone stick a note under his door where I knew he was staying at the hotel, which is, you've got to be resourceful as a producer. You've got to really sort of know how to put the pieces together. And this was, I had learned just enough to figure out how to get the word to Lance. And he agreed to do it. A funny story is...
All right, hold it right there. We're already at the bottom. Okay, so stay right there. We'll be right back. Chris Carter at the X-Files. Chris Carter is my guest. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. You watch the skies tonight. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Chicago's radio leader for the new millennium. News Talk 89 WLS.
All right, I'm going to try and fit in a few questions for Chris Carter, if you have any. We'll try and get them in. Time is short, but I'll do what I can. Chris, once again, you were about to tell a story about Lance when all this was beginning and the proposition was put to him.
Lance, you know, he's been an actor for some time, and he came to Millennium, and I asked him if he would not use his hands at all. That I thought Frank Black was not a salesman. He was a man of tremendous conviction, and that if he used his hands, it looked a little like he was trying to persuade people. It was one of the hardest things ever for Lance.
That's so interesting, because when Lance and I were sitting across from each other, he said, "Don't use your hands." Though it must have been passed down. I'm curious. I'm sure you know, with the run that Millennium had, all the demographics involved, but there's something about Lance Henriksen and women.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that got reflected in the demographics of the ratings.
Well, I mean, we did very well in the 1849. I mean, not as well as X-Files, of course. But I know my wife, if she's any indicator, was a big, big fan.
And my wife, too. Yeah, that's why I asked.
Of Terry O'Quinn, for that matter, too.
Listen, both the X-Files, and this is a really serious question, and Millennium have hinted at some coming terrible something, something that is pending right around the corner at the Millennium, and I wonder, it's sort of a recurring theme, and if you believe that there's some basis to that, or if it's just serving up what you think people want to see.
I'm actually one of these people who believes it's going to happen imminently anyway, in spite of the Millennium. So it's really just a product of my general pessimism and paranoia.
Pessimism and paranoia. Yeah, I have those too, pessimism and paranoia, and I'm beginning to get to be pretty cynical, I've noticed, with age, too. Now, I believe, Chris, that our government knows a whole hell of a lot more than they're telling us.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
You do, too, huh? Did you ever have an opportunity, you probably didn't, as busy as you are, to see the Air Force's press conference, Roswell Case Closed, it was called, and they attempted, it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I'm aware of it. I saw enough material from it that we actually used it, I think, as part of our mythology in the show.
The press conference itself was so bad that it's like it was intended to cause people to go, what a bunch of clowns, it's true.
Right. In fact, it had an amplifying effect.
It absolutely did. No question about it. And so then there are a lot of people who believe that there's a consortium within or outside of the government that keeps information from even the very highest levels, the president, perhaps some presidents, for example, even the current president. You think that could be true?
I don't know. I mean, I have so little faith in people's ability to keep a secret, to execute anything flawlessly. I believe in conspiracies, but I have a sort of sneaking suspicion that conspiracies are impossible because of human nature.
Well, you know, I used to believe that. I used to believe that, but then I remember Hazel O'Leary, the energy secretary, stepping forward and admitting that we had fed plutonium to pregnant women and children and older people and stuff like that.
Right.
And that secret was held for, oh, a lot of years,
right.
Chris, a lot of years. If they could hold something like that, then one has to imagine they could hold something like E.T. presence.
You know, I believe, you're right. But in this day and age of media saturation and the loss of privacy, I think it's harder and harder.
Were you the one, did you originally conceive yourself of the X-Files? Was there help? Was it presented to you? How did it come to be?
It was me.
It was you.
I was a big fan of the show Kolchak, the Night Stalker, when I was a kid, and I had, subsequently come to Hollywood, and because I had some kind of ability to write young, contemporary adult characters, I sort of spent the first few years doing that, and I remember pitching to Brandon Tartikoff an idea, but, you know, that came from Kolchak, the Night Stalker, a scary show. I said, there's nothing scary on television, and Brandon listened to me and paid no attention. I was then hired by Peter Roth at the Fox, at 20th Century Fox, under an exclusive contract, and the first thing I pitched to him was basically my I wanted to do something as scary as I remembered Kolchak the Night Stalker was.
I'm frequently criticized for delving into very dark areas myself. And so I can only imagine what your email and mail must be like. What percentage of the mail takes you on for delving into such dark possibilities?
A smaller portion than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes get sent interesting tapes about people recounting their UFO stories. and encounters, but mostly it is, you know, it's TV fandom.
So they don't really take you on for the social side of preaching doom and gloom, that kind of thing.
The critics, I think, have taken me on more than anyone. You know, they called the Millennium a relentlessly grim show, and
relentlessly grim. Yes, I have to describe the same way. But somehow, there's a big audience out there for relentlessly grim, isn't there?
Well, I mean, you know, no one wants. I mean, life is too short to dwell on the grim. But you know, the Frank Black was a very romantic hero. I mean, he had the weight of the world on his shoulders and wanted to keep the world safe for his family. That's a very bright hero in a way. He just happened to speak in a very laconic and heavy voice, and so I think people took that as grim when I took it as as Alice.
Well, extinctions. Let's talk about extinctions. In fact, did you know that the latest theory among some very prestigious Israeli scientists is that the dinosaurs were not killed by a large rock that smashed us, but rather by an eruption of the sun that virtually sterilized everything on the planet, killed and sterilized everything on the planet. That's actually a somewhat mainstream notion now, and might account for a series of extinctions on the planet. And there are some people who believe that there was perhaps even ancient technology that is still present in some of the relics we see on Earth, the pyramids that are all over the Earth, and some strange stone arrangements that may have given a hint about all of this. And if we just knew how to read it, we might be able to prevent whatever may be coming. You've heard any of those rumblings?
Yeah, I haven't. That's interesting. I mean, I've heard of the people who believe that sunspots, which are the same thing, but not to the degree you're talking about, have a profound effect on weather and on global...
even earthquakes.
Yeah.
Even earthquakes.
Right.
So, where are you going to take the show? I mean, the millennium now is racing at us. We're almost, here we are, almost at November, December, right. And
well,
that's it.
You know, curiously, we have brought Lance Henriksen onto the X-Files to finish up his character, his millennium character on the X-Files.
Oh, really?
Yes, and Mulder and Scully have... on New Year's Eve, they have an opportunity to do what a lot of people do on New Year's Eve. And so it is a something of a millennial episode for them as well.
Uh-huh. What do you think will happen to Millennium after the first of the year? I'm sure a million people ask you that all the time. How will it affect the show?
Well, Millennium isn't on anymore, actually, so it's already been affected.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm in X-Files.
Yes. You know, I don't know. I don't know with the sort of... That's the Y2K question.
It is, yes.
I don't know the answer. It won't affect it as far as I'm concerned. I'll continue to do the same thing I've always done over 7 years, is just try to do the best, you know, show possible. But I'm very curious to see what happens at the turn of the century, and how I might, in fact, use some of what happens for stories.
I'm very curious what's going to happen, too. Do you have any guesses about this whole Y2K thing? I mean, there's a million different scenarios, from very grim to nothing but a hiccup and a laugh and another glass of champagne.
I think that... Well, I was just saying to a guy I work with today, Frank Spondence, I was saying that I'm spending, you know, the I'm staying home, I'm staying put, I'm staying grounded.
Me too.
wisely, I think, and I'm predicting that there will be something unforeseen and unexpected and unanticipated. And
well, there are hundreds of thousands of embedded chips in power company switching equipment.
Right.
And I recollect well a little station, a little power station down in Idaho somewhere, up in Idaho, went offline and knocked the entire western third of the U.S., Mexico,
right.
and Canada
right.
down. So if only a small percentage of what they're talking about with regard to Y2K occurs, boy.
We've all seen the satellite hiccup that caused everyone's pagers to go out not long ago.
You bet.
And we saw, I've witnessed firsthand what happens on the freeway when someone drops a box of nails in L.A. The whole city log jams in gridlocks. So I'm very curious to see what happens when there's a real sort of, event.
Well, we had a little preview with a hurricane recently in the southeast, and what happened was massive millions of people began to move, and you couldn't get a hotel, and you couldn't get a place to stay, and it was horrible moving west. People were literally filling everything up. Never had that many people moved. And if we ever did have a really large event, do you think we are prepared to handle it? I mean, if something threatened, for example, a large portion of the East Coast, and people had to really move out suddenly, I don't think it could be done, Chris.
I don't think we're prepared for something like that.
No.
I witnessed the 50th anniversary of Sturgis, South Dakota, and they couldn't handle that.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you are personally somewhat hopeful, but professionally, I don't know, how would you describe yourself professionally as...
I'm a hopeful person, to be honest. I'm a happy person. I'm a person who wants things. I'm somewhat still idealistic. So all the grimness, the darkness, all the paranoia is a way of defending against that happiness. Defending that happiness, I should say.
You see, I sort of believe the same thing. I do think there's a change coming, some sort of, it's an overused phrase, paradigm shift. Something's going to happen, something fairly major. And I think that discussing it and having people begin to consider it is a kind of a protective thing. It causes them to begin to think about preparedness and that sort of thing. That's a good idea no matter what.
Right. In the opening credits of the Millennium originally, we had the words worry and wait. And those were significant words to me, for Lance Henriksen, for Frank Black, because they are a kind of bitter watchword for me.
Now, did you tell us a little while ago that essentially Mulder and Scully were going to consummate the millennium?
They had the opportunity to do what a lot of people do at the stroke of midnight on New Year's.
I see. All right. Other than the movie, the X-Files movie, what's in your mind?
I create and produce TV shows, so I'm always looking for an idea that will generate, 100-plus episodes, and there are very, very few and far between good ones. I'm looking for people to work with that can sustain that kind of work, which is very, very difficult, the most difficult work in show business, as far as I'm concerned.
Not a lot of new ideas out there, are there?
No, there aren't any other. They tend to be the typical franchises, the law show, the hospital show, the cop show.
I know.
And I try to do something different, as I have done over the past while with X-Files, Harsh Realm, and Millennium. And sometimes they work, obviously, and as this recent decision was made, sometimes I don't. But I'll continue to try to do something different because it's what interests me.
Well, I think the entertainment industry, taken as a whole, ran out of ideas years ago, and it just seems like we're seeing them regurgitated all over the place, and that's kind of why I stepped away from what I was doing about a decade ago and began doing something. I was sick of it all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to... there's nothing worse than working, that's something you're unhappy at, and...
That's right.
I'm lucky that I've found something that makes me happy, mostly.
So you're in search of it. In other words, you would be if suddenly the light bulb went off in the middle of the night for you,
yeah,
you wouldn't hesitate to begin development.
No, I mean, I'm a hard worker, so I'm, if I see something that is gives me the continues to generate story ideas, like the X-Files House is a perfect example. I mean, the show could go on indefinitely, really, because there are so many things to explore and stories to tell. If I find another idea like that, I get very excited about it because it's almost like the original idea begins to work for you and allows you. It creates a resource, is what it does.
Well, the Chinese have a curse about interesting times, and a lot of people suggest that at the Millennium, why programs like mine and programs like yours may suffer. I think not. I think that the times are going to get really, really interesting going into 2000 and beyond.
I think you're right.
Uh-huh. Yep. So I really want to thank you for coming and being on the program.
My pleasure.
Tonight. I know.
I owe you.
No, actually, you do owe me because I was on Millennium. I love that show. I love doing that show. And by the way, we talked for just a second before we were on the air, and you told me that once you were in one of your own episodes, and you strolled on there suggesting that they were all over highly paid people.
Right.
And then after you were done?
I told them whatever we were paying them wasn't enough.
Wasn't enough.
It was really hard. Anyone who thinks that it's easy to sit there in front of the camera and be natural or play a role is mistaken.
How in God's name they do that day in, day out, week in, week out is completely, utterly beyond me.
Well, that's easy.
It's easy?
No, to do it week in, week out. It's the first time that's really hard.
It's that first one, huh? All right, Chris, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Take care. We'll do it again. That's Chris Carter. The X-Files, Chris Carter. Harsh Realm gone after 3 weeks. I'd say that's harsh. And again, this is not directed at Fox. It's directed at all of the networks. Since when does any program catch on in the first 3 weeks? Don't touch that dial.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning, everybody. I am Art Bell. And it's strange, all my life I've heard about Uri Geller. Uri was actually born in Israel on December 20th, 1946, so he's a little bit younger than I am, by some months. And yet I've heard of him all my adult life. That's who we're going to have on here shortly, Uri Geller. I'll tell you more about him in a moment. Right now, let's take care of biz. Uri Geller was born in Israel on December 20th, 1946. His parents are of Hungarian and Austrian descent, and he is distantly related on his mother's side to Sigmund Freud. Oh, that's interesting. At the age of four, He had a mysterious encounter with a sphere of light while in a garden near his house. He first became aware of his unusual powers at age 5. One day during a meal, a spoon curled up in his hand and broke. Although he had applied no physical pressure to it, his parents were somewhat, as you can imagine, taken back, and Uri did not mention the incident to anyone else at the time. He developed these powers in school by demonstrating them to fellow students. His mother thought he inherited them from Sigmund Freud. When he was 11, he went to Cyprus, where he remained till he was 17. He then returned to Israel, served as a paratrooper in the Israeli army, fought the Six-Day War of 1967, during which he was wounded in action. From 1968 to 9, he worked as a model, photographed for many different ads. In 69, began to demonstrate his powers of telepathy and psychokinesis to a small select audiences. By the end of 71, however, his was a household name throughout Israel, thanks to numerous stage appearances. He was given a plug by the then Prime Minister Golda Meir. When asked on national radio what he predicted for the future of Israel, she replied, "Don't ask me, ask Uri Geller." And so here he is, Uri Geller. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Art. It's great being on your show.
Oh, it's great having you.
And, you know, that was the biggest luck in my life, Art, coming from the mouth of the Prime Minister. You can imagine what that did to me. First of all, it made me instantaneously a household name in Israel. But it also started the phones ringing, and managers started booking me into huge theaters. Mm-hmm. It was just really unbelievable that from nothing, you know, because I'm from poverty. I mean, I was scooting around Tel Aviv with my Vespa from one photographer to another, and suddenly I found myself performing in front of 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. So it was just unreal.
Why did she say that? In other words, she must have had very good reason to ask
yes.
to say that.
Yes, I'll tell you. I had a girlfriend who was a model. Her name was Iris Davidesco. And she took me once to a photo shoot, and a male model didn't show up. And the photographer looked at me and said, "Hey, you're good looking. Come and take his place." So he photographed me, and I just suddenly became really wanted for ads. And one day I bent a key in the hands of a photographer, and that freaked him out, and he invited me to a party to demonstrate my powers. And what amazed me, Art, more than the spoon bending and the watch fixing, was how astonished the people around me were. And these parties became more prestigious, and from photographers I went over to judges and lawyers and generals. And one day, Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel, was in one of these parties. And I decided to impress her, so I sent her to the bathroom. I think I was the only person to send the Prime Minister to the bathroom to draw a drawing. And she came back, and she was holding it. And I looked into her eyes, and I said, "Think of the drawing now." And I duplicated it. And I'll tell you the truth, I didn't have to be a psychic to know that she would draw a Star of David. Because what else would the Prime Minister of Israel draw? But it was exactly the same size, and that impressed her. And that's why she said it. You know, she didn't even think when you asked her to predict the future of Israel.
Yes.
She just said, "Don't ask me, ask Uri Geller."
Well, then let's. A lot of people think that the future of Israel is the future of the world. And so the future of Israel is very much on our minds. What do you know about the future of Israel, Uri?
Well, you have a very important point there. You know, Art, I'm a religious man. I believe in God. I actually pray to God every day. I believe in all religions, by the way. And under God, I know there are infinite spaces out there, and everything is possible. And I think there is a master plan out there. I personally think that our... you know, talking to each other tonight is not to interview Uri Geller, to plug another one of my books, but there is a reason for everything.
Yes.
Maybe we don't know what the reason and the purpose is today, but we will know someday, and including your listeners who are listening to us right now. I think we're all somehow united and we're connected. Israel is a very important point on our planet.
Yes.
Simply because Jerusalem is where Jesus walked. Mount Sinai is where Moses came down with the Ten Commandments, and Prophet Elijah. I mean, the whole, you know, past thousands of years ago, very important world-shattering events happened in that area of our planet.
You know, Ari, I'm not all that religious a person, but I was in Jerusalem. I was in Bethlehem recently, and I stood at the place where Jesus was born, and I could feel it. I could feel it all through me.
I bet you had goosebumps.
Absolutely.
You know, whatever people, whether you're a believer or you're an agnostic or an atheist, there is something in the air there that you can't take away. I mean, it's just, there is a deep, I don't want to call it even a vibration or a frequency, but there's something there. And it moves everyone, whether you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew.
Yes.
So, you know, I pray to God that there will be peace, because once there will be an everlasting peace in Israel with its Arab neighbors, I think that will catch around the world. And hopefully, maybe peace will come out from that area of our globe. And that's why it's so important. I'll tell you something, Art. I very rarely talk about this, but when I fought in the Six-Day War, my unit was taken to Jerusalem. And unfortunately, a horrifying event happened to me. Besides being wounded, about 25 minutes before I was wounded, suddenly a Jordanian soldier jumped out from behind a rock. And he looked me in the eye, and I had my Uzi, and he had his gun. And it was a matter of survival. It was whoever pressed the trigger first. And I beat him to it. And I actually killed a man. And today, you know, obviously I have horrifying recurring dreams. He comes in my dream in a nightmare. And he shakes me and he says, "Why did you do this?" And his face looks at me and his black mustache. So I've been there. I've seen my friends being killed. I've seen Arabs being killed. And, you know, I want peace, and I want it badly. And if everyone around the world, I don't know if you believe in the power of prayer, I do, but if everyone will pray for peace, gradually, hopefully, it will come.
Maybe.
Now, it will come. The Bible has to come.
The Bible suggests different events eventually, that that will be the cradle. That which was the beginning will be the end as well, the beginning of the end. And
well, you see, I don't believe that, Art. You know, people ask me, I appear around the world all the time. I get hundreds of thousands of letters and emails, and they ask me, do you really believe that Armageddon is around the corner, that the doomsday is coming? Mm-hmm. I don't believe that, although I respect Nostradamus' prophecies, but why should the world end? I mean, sure, there could be natural catastrophes. They happen all the time, you know, floodings and the rainforests are dying on us and pollution is raging and there are earthquakes and so on.
Ice caps melting, we could go on and on.
Yeah, but I think that we still have many, many millions of years on our beautiful planet. Yes, we have to conquer things. I mean, do you realize that as we speak right now, if I count 3 seconds, 1, 2, 3, someone just died from hunger. Every 3 seconds, someone dies from hunger.
Yes.
28 or 29 years ago, we put a man on the moon, yet we cannot cure cancer. So I ask myself, I struggle with my belief in God, because I say, well, okay, I believe in God, but if there is God, why are there, you know, sick children right now dying from leukemia and hundreds of hospitals around the world?
And what answer to that do you get?
I don't know. I'm very confused today. My very good friend is a rabbi called Shmuley Boteach, and I had a debate with him about that. And I want an answer, and I don't have an answer, yet I do believe in my heart that God created us. And you know that I'm actually on your show to promote Mind Medicine, my latest book. And Mind Medicine is about healing. And I'm not a healer. I'm not a miracle worker. But I believe that with positive thinking and plus with conventional medicine, you can get yourself, you can overcome illnesses. But the book is dedicated to a 10-year-old boy called Jonathan McCarthy, who I couldn't help, who died from a brain tumor. Yes, I eased his way to the other life, because I'm a great believer in life after death. But that is a huge puzzle. Why do these things happen if God is good?
We can make ourselves well, and I agree with you. We can also make ourselves sick.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, just driving in the streets of Los Angeles or New York, look at the posters, listen to the commercials, look at the ads in papers. We're constantly, Art, bombarded by violence. We're constantly bombarded by medicines to take, to cure yourself with this and that. You know, just by looking at the stuff we are being fed forcefully, we can get sick just by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can get stressed out just by our, you know, mere existence. Because most people out there, Art, are struggling. I'm lucky. You're lucky. I mean, I made some money in life, so I can now comfortably live.
Sure.
But most people, billions and billions of people, are in a constant survival.
Week to week, most of them are. You're absolutely correct. I am lucky, and I'm getting older, and so I can say what I want, and I don't care what I say anymore. I just say what I feel, and I'm sure you're getting to that same point or got there some time ago. Listen, one more question about Israel. They're trading land for peace. Now, I know that your long view is one of peace, but in the short term, do you really believe that trading land is going to bring peace?
I do, Art, and it's funny that you're asking me this question because it's a political question.
It is, yes.
You know that I know Prime Minister Barak. Actually, there is an unauthorized biography about me called Uri Geller, Magician and Mystic. It's not my book.
Mm-hmm.
And the publisher has made sure to somehow find this picture, which is a current picture. And I trust Barak. And Art, we came to a situation where there are people dying on both sides. Arabs and Israelis are dying all the time. Someone has to give. Someone has to be flexible. And I know lots of Israelis are going to be very angry at what I'm saying, and I'll probably get hate letters and so forth. But I believe, Art, that we have to give back land in order to secure long-lasting peace. And I fought there. I've seen my friends being blown up. I've seen my best friend crawl to hold on his leg that just flew off him, and he died. And I've seen blood absorbed by that land. But today I say be flexible and give back land to obtain peace.
All right. What about the very high land? Would you give that back to Syria, or would you wait?
It is dangerous. I agree with you. You know, in 1967... I joined the Israeli paratroopers in 1965, and in 1966, believe it or not, one of my tasks was to patrol the kibbutzim, you know, those little communities under the Golan Heights.
Yes.
That's probably what you're talking about.
It is.
And it was so funny because, and so interesting to see the Syrians so high above me. And I was in my command car with a big Browning machine gun. And I said to myself, I mean, this gun is useless because these people, the enemy is above me.
That's right.
And it was really an interesting scene. Once a week, Art, a bus would come with prostitutes, and they would sort of, you know, drop them in the bunkers for the Syrian soldiers. And we were sort of looking with binoculars and trying to see these women really close up.
Sure.
But it was always a threat. We always felt that there was someone so high above us that can destroy us. And that is a very, very interesting question. And today...
No, so in other words, if they had that land today, you do believe that you could coexist and that the terrible bombardment that could occur would not occur?
Yes, yes, yes. And I think gradually we'll have to give that land back. But you know, Art, having said that, unfortunately... weaponry today is so sophisticated. You know that Israel has nuclear weapons.
I know. They're in the desert.
Well, they're all over the place. I can guarantee you that there are small nuclear weapons right now attached to airplanes' wings, and they're ready to take off somewhere on a secret tarmac.
No doubt.
In an Air Force base in Israel.
No doubt. That
they're
much
ready to take off.
Sure, I'm sure they're that much on alert.
Yeah, and you know, a few years ago, this might come as a surprise to you, but I was actually asked by the American government, by Senator Claiborne Pell, who was the head of the American Foreign Relations Committee. He arranged me a secret meeting with Max Kempelman, who was the head of the nuclear negotiating team. They actually asked me to join them and to Geneva when they were negotiating with the Russians. And my task was to bombard Yuli Voronsov with positive thought waves to sign the nuclear treaty. Hmm. And next to me stood Vice President Al Gore, the head of the CIA. And I just couldn't believe it that they asked me to do this. And Yuli Voronsov was just across me, and I was just concentrating and saying sign, because I'm totally and utterly against nuclear weapons.
All right, Uri, hold it right there. We'll be right back. We've got plenty of time, lots of ground to cover. Uri Geller is my guest. Interesting. We'll be right back. I'm Art Bell.
A very old friend came by today, because he was telling everyone in town of the love that he and the reasoning of his latest claim. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere, and the reasoning of his latest claim. Though I smiled, the tears inside were burning.
To reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Good morning, everybody. My guest is an Israeli, Uri Geller. He now lives in Great Britain, and he's here visiting the U.S., and I haven't even asked why yet. But he has much to tell us, and we haven't even really begun, so I suggest you stay right where you are, and the saying goes, don't touch that dial. I've got so much respect for saxophone, I can't force myself to speak over it. Anyway, Uri Geller, we'll be right back. Once again, Uri Geller. Uri, you said that you sat across from a man trying to influence him. You know what remote viewing is, of course.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Art, years ago, in 1972, in a way, I started the program for the American government.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. Very few people know that, but, you know, I was taken straight into Stanford Research Institute, and that's where it all started. It was funded by the American Defense Department.
That's right. Now, I have interviewed quite a number of remote viewers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, almost all of the ones in the government program. Right?
Yes.
And I asked them all about remote influencing. Very different than remote viewing, a step beyond remote viewing.
True.
Some of them say, not possible. Others, I would say a majority, say, yes, it is possible. How do you influence the mind of another? And if you can do things like, in front of reporters, you stopped a cable car in midair.
Mm-hmm, true.
You stopped an escalator. If you can do those kinds of things to those kinds of massive objects,
uh-huh.
then what can you do to a human mind?
Okay. I believe that you definitely can influence another mind. I would like to influence another mind positively, but when I was younger and very naive and gullible, I went along with what I was asked to do. I can tell you to all our listeners, I mean, next time you're in a supermarket standing in a line, or you're flying in an aeroplane, or you're in a bus, focus your eyes on the back of someone's head.
Yes.
And say to them, in your heart, in your mind, say to them, turn around, turn around, turn around. I can almost guarantee to you that 8 out of 10 times, that person will turn around and look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is my theory, I have absolutely no scientific explanation to it, but I know that we emit some kind of a frequency or a wave or a vibration from our brain.
I'm sure.
I think it's extrasensory perception. And with those waves, we can influence other minds. What scared me when I used to work for the CIA, I was asked to, for instance, erase floppy disks that KGB agents had chained to the wrists when they were flying out of Mexico City to Paris.
Oh, really?
Take another plane to Russia. I had to influence the diplomatic pouches inside and erase those floppy disks.
Did you do that?
Yeah, and very successfully, because I was continuously asked to do more and more and more. I've done some incredible things, and I did it for ideological reasons. I wasn't paid for it. But then one day, and I will not mention which government asked me to do it or what agency, but Art, I was taken to a laboratory. It was in a desert. And I was taken to a white room, and in the room was a pig. And the scientist looks at me, and he says to me, I'm going to go and have lunch. You stay here with the pig, and by the time I come back, I want to see the pig dead. And I said, no, what are you talking about? He said, well, I would like to see if you can influence the heart of the pig. Now, you can imagine, Art, how that shocked me. First of all, I'm a great animal lover. I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat flesh at all because I'm against killing animals. And that horrified me. And I later on gradually understood that probably they wanted to see if the human mind can, you know, eliminate people, because then they would ask super psychics to probably assassinate Yulian Andropov, who was ahead of the KGB.
Saddam Hussein, perhaps today, before he poisons the world in some way. In other words, if you take somebody like Saddam Hussein, or looking back in history, Hitler, if it would be possible to burst a blood vessel in their head, for example, or cause their heart to begin to run out of control. I'm not asking you now if you would do it, but if it could be done.
I can't do it. There's no way my powers can activate that way.
Why?
I don't know. My only answer is that my ability or my belief system is attached to some universal law out there.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, maybe when I say it, it diminishes my credibility. But I sincerely believe that there is a higher governing force above me. And I won't call it God, but there is something out there that governs my abilities.
Then why didn't that same something then stop you before you pulled the trigger on that Jordanian soldier?
I don't know. You know, I can't answer more honestly than this.
No, that's honest.
You know, there are so many puzzles in my life that I'm searching for the answers.
We all are.
You know, Art, we all are looking for something, that bigger thing around the corner, true meaning of life. But I can tell you one thing, that throughout my career, I've influenced millions of people positively. Yes, in the early 70s, I wasn't an ego trip. I abandoned my friends. I was after fame and fortune. I was earning millions because, you know, I diverted my powers to finding oil and gold. And then I started writing my books, and I became an addict. I was actually addicted to bulimia. I would walk into a restaurant, devour everything, and then vomit. And it became an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to stop it with, again, with the willpower, with the mind power. And this is why I can afford today to write books like Mind Medicine, which will basically help people change their lives for the better, because I've been there. And I'm also in a position that, you know, I don't have to accumulate money anymore. Like you said, I have enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a super millionaire, but, you know, I have just enough to live comfortably. Therefore, many of the royalties that I earn today from my books and my columns go to children's hospitals. You know, mentioning my columns, Art, just a few months ago, I actually wrote a column about you.
I
have a weekly column in the London Times. And I wrote a very nice column about you, because I consider you a legend, actually.
Thank you.
So it's a privilege being on your show. You know, like, you heard about me for so many years.
Yes.
I heard about you for 30 years.
Yes, it is strange that our paths have not crossed until now, isn't it?
But you see, there is a reason for everything. And here I am sitting today talking to you. And like I said, I don't think it's about plugging books. And it's about something different. It's about something with different facets and maybe higher dimensions. I would like to believe, Art, that someday you and I and all your listeners and your followers and your fans and your people who don't like you and people who love you will be united somehow, and with the power of our minds, and I know this sounds fantasy now, and I know that some people will smile, but I hope that someday with the power of our brains, with our human potential, we will be able to neutralize nuclear weapons. This is a dream I have, but I think that it is somewhere shrouded in reality, and the day will come when that event will happen.
I tried 7 massive experiments, Barry. They were very interesting experiments. Since I have such a big audience, millions of people.
Yeah.
I guess it was perhaps foolish, but we had very arid areas in Florida that very badly needed rain. There was no forecast. I asked millions of people to concentrate on it. Within 24 hours, it was raining. Same in Texas. We tried again. Within 24 hours, actually less, there was rain when there was no forecast rain.
So on that, what you're saying to me, that the experiment worked.
Yes, in British Columbia we did it. Mm-hmm. We did it with some people who were going to die. They had been given virtually a death sentence. All of them said they felt it. All of them are still alive. But, you know, Ray, it began to scare me, and I stopped, because I'm not exactly sure what I'm toying with here.
Yeah.
Some people would write to me, and they'd say, stop the hurricane, and conduct another experiment, do another experiment.
Yes.
Well, I thought, you know, I really don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, well, Art, what you are doing is basically what shamans did hundreds and maybe thousands of years ago. You know, the Red Indians were dancing to the rain and sort of influencing clouds to pour rain or to make sunshine and so forth. I think, Art, that when you are in command of millions of people who are listening, or hundreds of thousands, you are really a catalyst. You are an enabler.
Yes.
You understand me? And what you do, you trigger the mind power of hundreds of thousands of people.
Yes.
And together, that is an immense power. So you know, I became famous when I looked into the camera. It was on the BBC and in a radio show. Actually, I was interviewed by a man called Jimmy Young. This is going back 28 years ago. And I bent his key, his producer's key. And actually, he was arrested. The producer was arrested that night trying to break into his own house. And he had to be bailed the next morning because he tried to get in through the window. But on that show, something made me tell people to bring their broken watches to the radio set. And I said, 1, 2, 3, work. And the BBC's telephone system blew up. People, this is true. People were calling up in a panic that their watches that didn't work for years, there were grandfather clocks and pocket watches 70, 80 years old that watchmakers sent home that they can't fix, came alive.
Yes.
So for years I thought, wow, this is unbelievable. I possess a power that can fly through the airwaves, go through the television sets and radios and affect people at home. But I was wrong.
And it affected you, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I was wrong because it wasn't me. I was only the catalyst.
The catalyst, yes.
I said 1, 2, 3, and you people now listening to me, I can almost guarantee you that if you go and bring your broken watches and broken clocks and some broken house appliances to the radio set while we speak in the next commercial, or you even put a spoon on the radio, and we are going to say 1, 2, 3, work, you can try to even wind them up if they have winders, I will tell you that in most of your homes, your watches will start ticking.
You know, it was before I booked you to come on the program. I had a spoon. I brought a spoon in here, and I have a camera, you know, and people with computers, why they can see me doing the program. And I brought a spoon in here, and I said, come on, okay, let's give it a try. Somebody called and said, let's try it. And so I held the spoon here, and I said, everybody out there, concentrate on bending this spoon.
Yes.
And the damnedest thing happened, Uri. It didn't bend. The last thing I expected,
yes,
it straightened.
No, come on.
No, I'm serious. It straightened.
What? Did it have a curve and it straightened?
That's correct.
Well, look, Art, I believe you. You're a credible person. And but it's no big deal because this happens all the time. Now, the debate, you know that there are so many... well, first of all, you know that there's a minority of skeptics out there that for years tried to debunk me.
You know the Amazing Randy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Well, I've invited him on the show. He won't come on my show.
I personally don't trust him. He's lied about me in his books. I mean, and by the way, maybe very few people know this, but he was found to be a liar by an American jury in an American court. Now, he's written the most horrible things about me, and that's when I said, wait a minute, I'm not going to take this. Because, you know, Art, I have two children. They're teenagers. And the last thing I want my kids is to read lies about their father. And when the skeptics saw that they can't sink me, they can't really debunk me, they started character assassination.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, when I read in books that Uri Geller was convicted or Uri Geller was arrested, now that is over the top.
I know.
Because not only that, I was never arrested, never convicted. I didn't even get a car park ticket in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand what that does to me.
Yes, I do, because it also happened to me, so I know. When they finally cannot get to you in any other way, then they get to you with libel and slander.
Exactly. And now it's one thing for skeptics not to believe in my power. Fine.
That's
it's your
right.
opinion. Don't buy my books.
That's
don't
right.
watch me on television.
Like my show, hate my show.
Exactly.
That's fine.
So,
I don't care.
So I had to go through a major... you know, struggle. I had to take people to court. I had to sue.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the day, the lawyers made the money. You know.
I do know.
Involved with a lawsuit, it's only the lawyers who win, really. But nowadays, skeptics know to be very careful what they say about me, because if they will libel me or damage me or defame me, they will end up in court.
Good for you. That's the same thing I did.
Good for you, too, then.
That's all you can do. Your name is very important. And,
especially, you know, Art, especially when you have children. Remember, your kids go to school. And sometimes these newspapers and some of the stories that are out there by skeptics can really influence your children.
I know.
It was the worst thing that can happen to a family. But that's it. But I'm over it now because, I mean, you know, Art, let's face it, the skeptics are really losers. They're a tiny minority. Sooner or later, 10,000 years from now, spoon bending and telepathy is going to be a joke. Everybody will be doing it. I mean, you cannot today avoid the fact that extrasensory perception happens to all of us every day. Look at the spirituality. Look at the healing that is happening around the world. Look at the awakening. I mean, you know, there's a movie called The Matrix.
Yes, I saw it.
There is a scene that was inspired by me of spoon bending, where Keanu Reeves walks into a room and children teach him how to bend spoons.
I remember that, yes.
There is a movie out called now The Sixth Sense.
I have not yet seen it.
So you see, the world is opening. The paranormal or the spirituality or the supernatural or the mysteries of the universe are becoming mainstream.
All right, let's do it. We've got a break coming up. So you would ask people, gather watches.
Yeah,
gather
let me tell you before the break, give me 30 seconds. All the people at home, go and get your broken watches, broken house appliances that are battery operated, broken clocks. Bring a spoon along to the radio set. And after the commercial, I will run through a very simple one-minute experiment with you. And I think you will be amazed. And then, Art, if you can open up your phone lines,
I can.
We'll get a few phone calls and see what happened in people's homes.
Oh, I definitely can do it. It's psychokinesis.
It is. And if you will allow me just to mention that my book is called Mind Medicine. The royalties are going to a children's hospital in England. And it's available, hopefully, in all bookshops, if not, then on Amazon.
Probably Amazon.com with a discount and bookstores.
It's a fascinating book. And the other book is not mine. It's an unauthorized biography, but it's with an incredible conclusion. It's written by Jonathan Margolis, who is Time Magazine's European correspondent. And it'll answer all the skeptics, believe me.
All right. Hold it right there. So an unauthorized biography that's kind of okay. Uri Geller is my guest. Get your clocks, your battery-operated appliances, and spoons, and be back here. We'll be right back.
Take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
So that you might understand who you're listening to. The following is from the UK News. Back in November of 96, thought you might find it interesting. A man seeking a long-lost submarine learned the cost of ignoring the advice of Uri Geller, the psychic spoon bender, they call him, when he spent more than £1 million looking in the wrong place. 8 years ago, Uri Geller pinpointed the exact location of the submarine sunk more than a century ago. But William Scanlon Murphy, skeptical of Geller's special powers, chose to ignore advice and instead financed a fruitless search in an area 15 miles west of the actual location. Eventually, he gave up. Believing the wreck had been destroyed, it was only when a fishing trawler snagged its nets on the submarine, the world's first powered submarine, that the exact accuracy of Geller's advice emerged. He's Uri Geller, and he's with us tonight, and he'll be right back. Now, take a moment to go and gather watches that don't work, appliances that have ceased to function, spoons that you'd like to see take on a new shape. Get them together. We'll be right back. All right. Assuming that you have rounded up the malfunctioning watches, the stopped toys and mechanisms and appliances and spoons and whatever else went around, we have with us Uri Geller, who's willing to give this a try. Now, what do we do?
Okay, here goes, Art. But we all must remember, this is a light-hearted experiment, but it is really astonishing if it works in your home.
Mm.
Now, first of all, to those people driving cars, don't take your eyes off the road. But if you have a broken component in your car, focus on it. Now, to the people at home, although your watches are broken, quickly wind them up, if at all they have winders. Close your hands over the watches, and no matter how strange or bizarre or even comical this will look to you, I want you, together with me, on the count of three, to shout out loud, the word work. Truly believe that you yourself, with your mind power, will activate those broken watches. So we'll do it three times. Here goes. And Art, you shout the word work with me together. Okay.
All right.
One, two, three, work.
Work.
One more time. One, two, three, work.
Work.
And the last time, one, two, three, work.
Work.
Now, people at home, open your hands. Look at the faces of your watches or clocks. If they have a second hand, look at it. Is it moving? If you don't have a second hand, lift the watches or the clocks to your ears right now and listen. Now, if anything happened to the spoon, whether it leaped off the radio or it bent slightly or any other strange event happened in your home, do let Art know this and call us. Now, to those who nothing happened to you, don't be disappointed because it doesn't happen all the time. It doesn't happen to everyone. But if something interesting happened, especially if an old watch started ticking, give us a call right now.
All right. All right. Call right now. You know what the numbers are, folks. But may I ask you why it works? Why does it work?
Art, I wish I knew. I can tell you one thing. Yes, there are a few watches that you shake them or you warm them and all that. They will start ticking for a few minutes and stop. But I had thousands and thousands of reports from around the world from people who told me that they took their watches and pocket watches and clocks to watchmakers many times, and the watchmaker sent them home, say, forget it, there's a broken part, it'll never work, just
yep.
Keep it as a sentimental memento. I believe that when we say 1, 2, 3, work, we do unleash an energy, and we visualize the watch working, and somehow, I don't know the technicality of it, but somehow that energy penetrates the watch and fixes it. It's that simple. And it's actually quite amazing because some of the reaction is just staggering from people. So now, if your phone lines, Art, were not busy from before...
Oh, don't worry about that.
...then you will get calls. And so I just hope that your lines weren't occupied before the experiment by just people trying to call us.
No, we'll just... what we'll do is we'll begin taking random calls, but I guess... In a lot of movies, I've seen this. People like yourself who have the power that you have or are able to bring forth in people, they will always ask, from where does this power come? Does it come from God?
Well, look, Art, I believe that all talents come from God. You're a presenter. Your talent comes from God. A taxi driver, his talent, his job comes from God. So... ultimately, because I'm religious, because I believe that there is a creator out there that created us, I would like to believe that, yes, this is a gift. But having said that, many of my books, you know, I write, you know, by the way, I write both fiction and nonfiction. Actually, my second novel, Ella, is about a 14-year-old girl who is abused at home and bullied in school, and she suddenly develops supernatural powers. But in my how-to books, I tell people, look, we all have this force. It is dormant in our minds. We can awaken it. We
yes.
can exercise it, and we can harness it.
I believe that, too. All right, well, fine. Let's take some calls. First time caller line, you're on the air with Uri Geller and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. This is Robert out in Kalapana, Hawaii.
Well, hi there.
Yeah, hey. Okay, I have two. One's a clock. It's like this antique clock. Beautiful. I wouldn't throw it away because it has base relief statues, like these angels and fairies on both sides.
Yeah.
Very colorful, with all these flowers and a big sunflower around it, and it's just an art piece. And I swear, it started ticking.
And you're actually calling from Hawaii?
Oh, yes.
Wow. That's amazing. But you know, Art, let me ask you this. By the way, what's your name?
I'm Robert. And Yuri, I am so happy to speak with you because I read your book, and this was my story with no space between the two words.
Yeah, this is a long time ago,
mystery.
28 years ago.
Like
that was my
mystery,
first book.
Right?
But tell me, Robert, when this watch started ticking, were you amazed, or your reaction?
Yes. I was totally amazed because I've done so many things to try to make it work and everything.
That's great.
And it really just began working.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Robert, you owe me $1 now.
Earlier, and nothing would happen and everything. And
all right. Yeah, Uri says you owe him a buck.
I'm joking. I'm joking. Send the buck to a charity in Hawaii.
All right. Send it to your favorite charity. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Uri Geller and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's me.
I beg your, yes, it's you.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Well, this is Rick in Reno.
Hi, Rick.
Yeah, and, well, when Yuri said to go look for a watch, I went looking for a rather cheap broken watch that I didn't know if I would be able to find it, and I didn't find it. Instead, I found another watch that I had stuffed away maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
Had completely forgotten about it, a much more valuable watch, but I had gotten it salt water damaged in Hawaii, and I'd pretty much given up on it. And it's working.
You know, Art, this is interesting. Where are you calling from?
Reno.
And you say that you damaged it in Hawaii?
Yes, I did.
And the call before you, because Art was saying that he's taking random calls, the call before you was actually from Hawaii.
Yes, I did hear that.
So that's synchronicity for you. And so now it's ticking, right?
Yes, it is.
Good.
Now,
you've got to fix
the
watch. You know, you've got
to
fix the watch now.
Wait a minute, sir. Hold it. One at a time. One at a time. Caller?
Yes.
What were you saying?
Well, to be honest with you, it began ticking shortly before he began the experiment, but I found it somewhat a matter of synchronicity that I found this watch that I wasn't even thinking about, that I'd totally forgotten that I still had.
All right. Well, there's a very good point, Uri. In other words, it began ticking before we even did the 1, 2, 3 work 3 times. But is it not possible that the mind itself, which is really doing all this anyway, simply went to work on it the moment we began talking about it?
Oh, of course. Of course. I get many reports that before the person goes to the drawer.
Yes.
And I had a woman just a couple of days ago that had an 85-year-old pocket watch. And she took it 3 times to the watchmaker, and the watchmaker sent it back telling her, forget it. It'll never tick. And it was in a wardrobe. And when I came on the air and told people to go and get the watches, she couldn't find it. And finally, when she found it, before the experiment, she opened the drawer and it was under some, I don't know, T-shirt, and it was ticking.
Nice.
So it's definitely, it is possible that the mind goes to work before the actual experiment.
I would think so. The moment you begin considering it, it's kind of like ghosts and poltergeists. Somehow they seem to come to those who consider the proposition of them.
Yes, and you know, another possibility, Art Gee, that we're really dealing with no time, meaning that maybe the present and the past and the future is happening right now at the same moment.
I know it's a bit
complicated to understand, but that is a possibility.
All right, let's continue on the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Uri Geller and Art Bell. Hi.
Yeah, hi. It's a pleasure to speak to both of you.
Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from New York City.
All right.
I actually was trying the spoon thing to bend the spoon, and I was wondering if I should put it over the stereo or put it over the speaker.
Well, I usually tell people to put it on the radio.
On the stereo itself.
Yeah, because some reports, when I say some, thousands of people call up and write me and email me that actually the spoon leaps off the radio set. It's more rare, but it definitely happens. And that is really far out to sea. Can you imagine suddenly the spoon takes off and just jumps off?
Right.
So it is a possibility. So while we're still on, you know, try to do it. Maybe it will happen to you.
Okay.
But thanks for calling.
So who did that? If the spoon jumps off the radio,
Did you do that, or did you facilitate it? Did the person sitting there in front of that radio do it?
The person sitting at home does it, not me.
That's what I thought.
I'm a catalyst, Art. I'm an enabler. I started this. You realize, Art, that when I came on the scene, well, first of all, I discovered this power when I was a small child, but when I became sort of world famous because of my TV shows, I thought that it was me doing it until at UCLA, the University of Los Angeles, a scientist, Dr. Thelma Moss, videotaped me and fixing broken watches. And I went back to New York, and then she played that videotape to students who came with broken timepieces. And lo and behold, from the video, the watches started ticking. And I was really disappointed and angry. I said, how come? I'm in New York. How can a video do it?
Yes.
And that's when it dawned on me that it wasn't really me. I was the trigger. It's the people's mind that unleashed the power. And this is why, these are trivial things, but that's why I believe that within us, we have human potential, enormous one. We can also heal. Parallel to medicine, never abandon medicine. That's dangerous. So you've got to see your doctor. You've got to listen to the conventional medicine. But parallel to conventional medicine, you've got a force in your mind which can be activated for healing purposes. And that is what Mind Medicine, my latest book, is about.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Uri Geller and Art Bell. Turn off your radio, please.
It's off.
All right. Welcome to the show. Where are you?
I'm in Gallatin, Tennessee.
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us a little bit. You're not too loud. Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
You bet.
I think we fixed the TV tube.
Wow.
A TV tube?
Yes, sir.
How
so? My daughter's television set, the TV tube, has been getting old and it's turning green.
Oh, yes.
And I went into her bedroom and turned it on and sat there and watched it, and I couldn't shout because everybody in the house is asleep. But I shouted in my mind.
Uh-huh.
And every time, the three times you've done it, the picture seemed to get clearer and clearer. So we'll wait and see what happens.
Okay.
All right, sir. Thank you. Tell me, Uri, many times, what happens later? Do the watches, again, stop?
No.
Is it a temporary?
Most watches that are fixed or through the airwaves or television or radio are fixed for good. Yes, you will find those ones that will suddenly just tick for half an hour and then stop. By the way, you know that I stopped the Big Ben twice. And, you know, the Big Ben, that's a huge clock.
It's huge, all right.
And you know, I got a lot of hate letters from England, you know.
I'll bet you did.
That I shouldn't touch it because it's sort of a, you know, heritage and it's a monument that presents England.
That's right.
But it's interesting how, for instance, a few years ago when England played Scotland in soccer,
yes.
I was actually asked to help England beat Scotland.
Were you really?
Yeah, so they put me in a helicopter,
yes,
hovering over Wembley. That's
yes,
where the match played. And Scotland got a penalty shoot. So their main player, the captain, put the ball down, a guy called Gary McAllister. And I concentrated in the helicopter, and I swear to you, Art, and this is filmed by hundreds of cameras.
Yes.
The ball moved away from his leg. From being a stationary ball, he moved away, and he missed the penalty. So you can imagine how angry Scotland were.
Well, I can't imagine, and Big Ben is nothing compared to affecting a soccer game. You weren't responsible for the behavior of the English in the last World Cup in France, were you?
Well, I hope not, because I was there.
Oh, you were there.
But just to complete, Art, the story about England and Scotland, just a week ago, Scotland called me. And they said, Uri, now you have to help us because they are going to play England in about 2 weeks.
Oh.
So I'll find myself hovering in a helicopter, this time helping Scotland. Funny.
I suppose you could put yourself out to the highest bidder.
Well, no.
You used to do, huh?
I have to be neutral. I helped England, now I'm going to help Scotland. And it's fun, you know. But it really does help because, once again, it's the masses. It's the millions of people. When Brazil played in Los Angeles against Italy, and Baggio was going to score a penalty, I visualized 80 million Brazilians sending him his thought waves to miss. And he kicked the ball, and it actually went out of control, and he missed the penalty. So I believe it was the millions of Brazilians that influenced Baggio to miss the penalty.
You really could get in trouble for that kind of thing, Uri. Hold it right there. The rest of the world's very sensitive about their soccer. Really sensitive. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Her hair is hollow gold. Lips sweet as pie. Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She's kind of music on you. You won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis eyes. And she'll tease you. She'll unease you.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Do you believe in miracles, prayer, what we're doing right now? Do you think they're the same thing? We'll ask a little bit about that. Oh, just a couple of quick questions for Uri Geller, then we're back to the phones. Uri, if you could make a watch start, can you make a watch stop?
Well, I did stop the Big Ben. And
so the answer is yes, then?
Yes, yes. But most of the time, I'm well known for, you know, fixing broken watches. And, you know, Art, in the late 60s, when I, you know, left the paratroopers and started performing, it was just unbelievable. There were hundreds of people who were hauling in not only watches to my performances, but grandfather clocks, broken dishwashers, broken air conditions. It was unbelievable, and they would all sort of put it on the stage, and because the watches were broken anyhow, people were throwing it onto the stage, and I had to duck broken watches and clocks coming flying towards me. And it was really a funny but a mystical experience when I had this mountain of broken timepieces on the stage, and everyone together with me in the auditorium, we said, 1, 2, 3, work, and they came alive. And that's what made me famous, because it was such a bizarre act. There was nothing like that before I came on the scene.
All right. You mentioned football, translation soccer,
yes,
in Europe. And incidentally, you're not messing with a baseball team down in Atlanta, are you?
Well, I'll tell you, I was actually, I spent a day with Miami Heat, you know, the basketball team,
yes,
in Israel.
Yes.
Actually, just a few days ago. And I'm sorry that the Mets didn't ask me to help them in New York, because I was there that day that they lost. And I tell you, if they would have allowed me to walk into the dressing room for 2 minutes to psych up the players, they would have won.
I've got a story here from the BBC News, April 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, Glenn Hoddle is to sue Uri Geller over his claims in a Sunday newspaper that the England coach visited him at his home to seek his help.
Ray Geller's article claimed the meeting took place at his Berkshire mansion a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And so he was going to sue you. He was at that point seeking legal advice. Did he sue you?
No, of course not.
He
did. Because it is true that he did come to my house. Let me just explain. Glenn Hoddle was the coach of England.
Yes.
Not a big deal, you know. But what he did, he also asked the help of a faith healer called Eileen Drury.
Oh.
Now, in which is very unusual and very rare that the coach of a country is asking a faith healer to heal his players. It's okay to do it in private, but don't announce it to the world press.
Right.
Now, Glenn Hoddle and Eileen Drury visited my home, and she actually did a healing session on me. It was very interesting because she's a faith healer. Nevertheless, Glenn Hoddle was asked in a press conference about Uri Geller, and he flatly denied coming to my house. And I was really angry because it made me look like a liar. And, you know, it was front page news, and my children went to school, and they came back home and said, you know, Father, these papers are saying that you're a liar, that Glenn Hoddle says that he never visited your home. And I was furious. Obviously, he didn't sue me because it was true. He did come to my house with Eileen Drury, and that was the end of that.
I see. So, dropped and forgotten.
Yeah, of course.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Uri Geller and Art Bell. Good morning.
Art, unbelievable.
Where are you, sir?
I am in El Granada, California, south of San Francisco.
All right.
I just got home, came in the door, got online, got the phone number, and started calling. Mm-hmm. I was coming back from a late-night jam session with some buddies. Got a Nissan Pathfinder, and the fog light hasn't been working for over a month. And it's like a little separate switch in the light stock. So I turned it to the on position, and still wasn't working. I did the first work. Nothing happened. The second one, like the instant I set it, the light flickered. The third one stayed on. And then I flicked the switch probably another 20 times, and it worked every single time. It was unbelievable. I'm freaked out.
What, by the way, what's your name?
Oh, it's Silwan.
And where are you calling from exactly?
El Granada, California. It's probably about 23 miles south of San Francisco.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great. You see, Art, if nothing else, I save a lot of money to people. He doesn't have to take his car to be fixed, you know. And so many thousands of watches are ticking now, so I bet that the watchmaker associations are really going to be upset at me.
I bet they are. Well, listen, you know, people have said this to me. Are you ever going to take the next step? And when I mean the next step, fixing watches is one thing, bending spoons is something else again, moving things through the air is very interesting, but what about our real problems in the world, our social issues, our environment? In other words, are you tempted at all to go beyond, to begin to tackle some of the very difficult issues in the world?
Well, look, Art, what I've demonstrated tonight is actually, you asked me to do it. I don't do it anymore because it is rather trivial. But it is astonishing and fascinating because it proves that the power of the mind really works.
Yeah, but it means more. I mean, it means that more could be done.
Yes, yes. Well, I am doing a lot of interesting work that I cannot talk about. You must understand, these are very sensitive issues. I can tell you that I meet a lot of politicians, a lot of interesting officials in very high positions. I meet prime ministers and presidents. I can't drop names because it will damage their reputation.
Could you affect the outcome of an election?
Well, I believe me, I've been asked to do that, and I refuse because that is not me. That would not be fair. But I do work where I gel people together.
Yes, but I didn't ask you would you. I said could you.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. If I get on television, and, you know, I know that I have 15 or 20 or 30 million viewers. I mean, some of my performances are watched by 48 million people. I just came back from Japan. Tens and tens of millions of people watched me. Obviously, it's the same thing like you and your listeners did to the rain. You unite millions of minds together. And when that happens, a huge surge of energy materializes.
Mm-hmm.
And that power can influence votes. Of course it can be done.
Uri, that power, should we be using it? Do you believe that we should be using it for environmental reasons? For
absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. I am very concerned about, you know, the destroying of planet Earth.
So am I.
You know, I have a very big website, probably like yours, but mine is an educational website. It's a non-commercial one.
I think we have a link, by the way.
That's great. By the way, it's if you'll allow me to mention it, it's www.urigeller, one word, .com. And on the front page, I tell people that, hey, wake up. We are killing our planet. And when I say that, you know, the pollution is immense. There are still diseases raging. Political situations are awful. As we speak, there are wars raging. Small wars, but they're going on. Then there is the destroying of our environment. So my dream, like I told you that almost in the beginning of the program, is that someday to unite everyone together, not necessarily me, it could be you. It could be David Bowie.
It could be anybody. Do you believe there is a collective consciousness?
Yes.
Do you believe that a suggestion can be made to that collective consciousness? That
yes, a suggestion could be made, almost a subliminal suggestion can be made to our universal consciousness, which is valid and tangible. And doing that, we can turn things around. It's very hard for me to explain right now how it works, but I believe it could work. The problem is art. We don't get the opportunity to do it because the world is run by mega corporations.
Oh, I know.
The world is run by probably people who want wars because we're talking about thousands of billions of dollars in business. I question, and I bring up the same question. Edgar Mitchell is my friend. He walked on the moon. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon.
Yes, I know him.
And yet, we planted a man on the moon, we brought them back, but we cannot cure cancer. I do not accept that. I cannot believe that with our technology, with our medical advancement, with a huge leap in technology, that we cannot cure it. There must be a block somewhere. So there is, in my opinion, and look, again, this is my opinion, there is almost an invisible world conspiracy not to allow these things to happen.
I agree. Uri, the powers that we're talking about right now, are they the same as the powers of prayer?
I will have to say yes. The powers of prayer today are being validated in very important places like Yale and Princeton.
Oh, yes.
And you know very well, Art, that there are experiments, scientific experiments, where they take two groups of people who are sick. One group is prayed for, the other is not. Actually, just yesterday I saw it on one of the news, Reuters or UPI, that the power of prayer works. If you pray for someone, and that someone doesn't even know that he's being prayed for...
It works.
It works.
And that they're proving it scientifically. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
In control groups. Now,
in control groups.
They're doing some other work, too, at Princeton that involves the mind affecting random number generators,
exactly.
And they are proving that it can be done, and I have done it, Uri. I've got the program.
I believe you. I mean, Professor Yan, for 11 years, and this is Princeton University. We're not talking about a small parapsychological association here. This is a mega university, a prestigious conservative place. This professor, for 11 years, not for 1 month, because I was tested at Stanford for just maybe 6 months.
How did that come out?
You mean my test?
Yes.
Oh, they were, you know, I did the test under laboratory control conditions, so no one can say, oh, I hoodwinked the scientists. Some skeptics still say that, but for what? But my tests were published in Nature magazine, the most prestigious scientific magazine in the world, and that was enough for me to be validated. But going back to Princeton, you know, here is a man for that for 11 years took ordinary human beings, not Uri Gellers, and he discovered that ordinary people, like everyone out there, could influence random numbers on computers.
Yes.
And that validated PK, psychokinesis. Now, it's very hard today to take this power and use it in tangible manners, in constructive manners, because it's just the beginning. But I guarantee you that 25,000 years from now, we will be using telepathy, and we will be using psychokinesis, and probably 100,000 years from now, there will be no more aeroplanes. You will walk into some kind of a tank, you will press a button, your body will dematerialize from Los Angeles and appear in Sydney, Australia.
IBM is working on it now.
Of course, and it'll happen. Some scientists, I'm working now with someone called Professor Brian Josephson, who's actually a Nobel Prize physicist. He won a Nobel Prize for physics. And he believes that the spoon bending is actually quantum mechanics. It's very, very interesting. So I'm learning a lot, Art. For years and years, I was always fascinated and amazed by my powers. I was astonished by the reaction of people. But I'm beginning to learn now that maybe there is an unexplained science to what I do and to what other people do.
Well, the average citizen would always say, the skeptic would always say, well, if he has these powers, then why isn't he rich? Why didn't he make a lot of money in the stock market or gold or silver or something like that? But you did, didn't you?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm a millionaire today. I don't want to sound boasting, but I made enough money. I actually, in the mid-70s, diverted my powers to find oil. And they opened maps in front of me, and I said, okay, this is where I feel it is. Then we flew over with airplanes and helicopters, and I was successful. I didn't do it many times. I was also very young and gullible then, and I remember the Mexican president sent me up with a helicopter with some Mexican geologists, and I pointed up at a place in the Gulf of Mexico, and I marked it on the map with a little X. And a year and a half later, I read in the Financial Times that they found the biggest offshore oil there. And I laugh today because all I got out of it was a Mexican passport. The president made me a Mexican citizen.
Did he really?
Yeah, as an honor, you know, and my passport is number one. No one ever got a Mexican passport without being born in Mexico. I would rather give that passport back to them and get some royalties.
I was going to say, yes.
Out of the oil coming out of the sea there. But again, I knew when I had enough. I want to be with my family. Today I live in a small village with my wife and my children and my friends.
I understand.
And I write my books, I write my columns. Sometimes I travel around the world promoting my books. And I'm happy. I have managed to create peace of mind around me. And this is where I come from, Art. And I think in a strange way we're very similar. Don't you agree?
I do agree. Do you feel like you have done the bulk of what you have wanted to accomplish, you have accomplished, and now you're living your life? And
well, Art, I don't think anyone comes to perfection, even near perfection.
That's right.
I, like you, and like all of our listeners, we're all the time searching. We all the time feel that there's something big around the corner, something that can change our life even further, something positive, something awesome. And we are in a journey. We are a constant journey all the time.
Do you believe that? Something big around the corner. Something big is coming. Do you?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I think something very positive and mega is coming towards us, something good, something wonderful. And I hope that we will be ready to accept that.
Well, I hope it's something good. I hope it's something wonderful. All I know is it's something big, and it's coming. I hope your optimism is justified. Listen, we're coming to the top of the hour.
Okay.
And I've got a million calls, and we can either continue for another hour if you're awake, or it's up to you. I always ask.
All right, I'll tell you what. Because I've always admired you, I'm going to stay with you for another hour.
Good.
Then I'm going to go to sleep. So I'm with you for another hour. I love being with you, and I love being with your listeners.
Done. Uri, stay right there. Uri Geller is my guest. I'm Art Bell from the high desert of the Great American Southwest, where it's finally beginning to cool off a little bit. This is Coast to Coast AM.
No, I would not give you false hope on this strange mountain day. But the mother and child reunion is only a motion away. Oh, little daughter of mine, I care for the life of me. Remember.
Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Hey, don't you know you are on a ride? And it's what you make of it that counts. Ray Geller is here with us this night. And he'll be right back. Oh, I almost interrupted my infamous stinger. I can't do that. Listen, I am trying at the last moment to see if I can get the attention of Jane Seymour, who, of course, was in Somewhere in Time. As you know, I'm going to the Somewhere in Time reunion at Mackinac Island in Michigan. It's going to be a plane flight. You ought to check the weather forecast for the Northwest. There is the mother of all storms coming in, so I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. But I thought it'd be real kick to get Jane Seymour on the air and just talk to her a few minutes about Somewhere in Time. It's such a very special, special movie for me. So if you have any influence with Jane Seymour, I'm making my back channel calls already, but any of you have any influence with her, I'd sure love to have her here tomorrow night for a few minutes. All right, back to Uri Geller.
Actually, Art, let's all influence her right now to get on your show tomorrow. Come on, let's give it a 15-second try. Come on, Jane Seymour. Get on Art Bell tomorrow.
Yeah, everybody, give it just a few intense moments of thought for me here. Come on, Jane. All right, listen, I've got a fax here.
Yep.
It says, would you please ask Uri to describe, this is very interesting, the first use and what happened after you did when you influenced gambling venture at a casino near London of, 12 to 18 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that was the first time that I believed I abused my powers.
Oh.
You see, Art, once again, I came from a very poor family. And we had nothing when I was a child. I lived with my mother in a one-room apartment. So when I started traveling the world, I decided one day to walk into a London casino.
Makes sense to me.
Yep. And try to influence the roulette table. And what I did is I stood by the sort of turning roulette.
Yes.
Now, I either predicted on which number the ball will fall, or with PK, I made it fall on the number I put my money on.
Yes.
And in a few hours, I walked out of the casino with £17,000, which today would have been about $27,000, $28,000, and that was a lot of money for me then. And they were all in rubber bands, and I put them in my black coat, and the next morning, I was driven in a limousine
to promote a record that I did. Believe it or not, I cut a record at that time.
Yeah.
I'm not a singer, so I talked, you know.
You talked.
Through the songs. And on the way to this radio station, suddenly I was sitting in this limousine, a Daimler, which had a compartment behind, which means there was a divider between me and the driver,
sure.
A glass divider.
Sure.
And suddenly, out of nowhere, I heard a voice shouting in my head. And I panicked. I thought I was going insane. It was pounding. It was screaming. And it was almost like a huge anxiety attack.
Yes.
And I panicked. And I broke the glass between me and the driver, and I grabbed his jacket from behind.
By now, he's panicked.
Yeah, and I started shaking him, and I shouted, stop the car, stop the car. And luckily, he sort of swung the car off the road, and suddenly the door opened, almost like an invisible hand opened it. And Art, I was thrown out of the car with such force, it almost embedded me into the ground. The whole event lasted for maybe, I don't know, 20 seconds, and then it suddenly stopped. And I had a strange reaction. I ran into the gas station, and I started flicking through magazines and newspapers. I was embarrassed. Then I walked back to the car, and I told the driver to continue driving.
Yeah.
I lowered the window of the car, and Art, I threw out 17,000 pounds out of the window.
Oof. Oof.
And that's what happened.
Message for Uri, huh?
Yeah.
Do you remember what was being yelled at you, what was being conveyed to you?
It wasn't a voice or a sound that I could decipher. It was a shout. And, you know, obviously, I thought it was like God was telling me something.
Something like greed!
Yeah, it was awful. It was awful. It never happened to me again. And, you know, Art, in my life, some events happen to me that diminish my credibility when I talk about it. But, Art, I have to stick to the truth, and there are certain events in my life that I will not turn away from.
Mm-hmm.
And another astonishing thing that occurred to me in Manhattan, and I'm going to tell it to you exactly the way it occurred. And to your listeners out there, please believe me that it is true. I was coming back from Bloomingdale's with a binocular in my hand that I bought for a doctor as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I went up to the apartment of Maria Janice Cooper, who is my best friend still today. She's Gary Cooper's daughter, and she's married to a very famous classical pianist called Byron Janice. I stayed with them for a while, and then I said, I'm going to jog back to my apartment, which was on 57th and 1st Avenue. And it took maybe 8 minutes to jog from Park Avenue to my apartment. Now, a few yards before I reached the canopy of my entrance, you know, in New York, you have this canopy stretching out to the road.
Oh, yes.
I suddenly look at the pavement, and I see that I'm no longer on the pavement. And the next thing I remember is I was hurled through the air, and something was rushing towards my face, and obviously I wanted to protect my head, and I sort of stretched my hands, and I crushed through some metal mesh, fell on a round table on the floor. I actually hurt my knee, and it took me a few minutes to realize where I was, Art.
Where were you?
And I was on the floor in a porched room 36 miles out of Manhattan in a house that belonged to a scientist called Andre Puharich. And there I was. Now, he found me. It took him five. I was shouting, Andre, Andre, because I recognized the porch. And he found me. It took him minutes to locate me. And you asked me what happened. I can't explain you this thing. In 1 second, I was in Manhattan.
Could he explain it?
No. He suspected that maybe I was tricking him, and there was snow outside, so his first reaction was to go out to the garden to look for footprints.
Of course.
And this is a summer porch which was sealed with a thin metal, you know, sort of a mesh to keep out flies
and insects.
And that was torn from the outside. The glass on the table was on the floor broken. And you know, when it dawned on me, the severity of this event was when he drove me back to Manhattan in his daughter's Volkswagen. That's when I realized, my God, what happened was that I just, in no time, suddenly materialized, or whatever you want to call it, bilocated into Ossining, New York. And when I wrote about it in my first book, in my story, which actually one of your listeners brought up, it really damaged me, because people said, this is too much, Geller. You know, bending spoons and reading minds is one thing, but you're telling us that, what, to believe you, that you dematerialized from Manhattan and appeared in Ossining, New York?
They're not really different things, though, are they?
But they happened, Art. This thing occurred to me. What, am I going to hide it? Am I going to avoid talking about
No.
it? Because other people will make fun out of me?
No, and I think all this power and all these things we're talking about come from one single source, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very hesitant to say what it is. I don't know.
Yes. You know, Art, there is a very slight similarity in your website and mine, is that I use the SETI at home screensaver.
Oh, you use SETI at home?
Yeah, that's my screensaver. It's not on 24 hours a day.
The team Art Bell is now number one.
Wow.
In the world.
Congratulations.
Thank you. By a long shot, as a matter
that's
of fact.
That's great.
Do you believe that one day we may get the signal, we may make contact, or do you think they're here now?
Well, the reason I brought this up, because I wanted to ask you, Art, before I tell you my answer,
sure.
What I believe in.
Sure.
What do you think? Do you believe that we are visited by crafts or by UFOs?
Yes.
Do you believe that some of the stories about abductions are true? Do you think that extraterrestrials are among us? I'd like to hear from you.
What I believe,
yeah.
Huh? Yes, I think we're being visited. I have seen craft do things that have no earthly explanation. So, yes, I believe we are being visited.
Yes.
I've talked to many people who have been abducted, and I believe some of them, and I don't believe some of them.
Yes.
So, the answer is yes, to really all of it. I rather believe it to be true more than not.
Yes.
The old Occam's razor thing. I think it's the most likely explanation that life is very abundant everywhere. And so there's every reason to believe that we may be watched.
Yep.
We have not yet really been contacted, but we're watched. I think we're watched.
Yep. Well, Art, my answer is almost identical to yours. You know, it's hard to believe that all the sightings are true stories, but forget all the sightings. Let's concentrate on 1%. If 1% is real, then we are being visited.
Well, I'll give you a real one. Just before the program began, I got news from the UFO Reporting Center up in Seattle that two aircraft, large, heavy 747-type aircraft, in the southern tier of the U.S. have just reported seeing a gigantic, their word, gigantic triangle doing an immense speed. This was seen by two commercial aircraft crews at the same time, Uri.
Well, this is interesting, Art, because this doesn't happen every day. You realize
no, it
that.
It does not.
Not from two 747s, but in Israel, in my performances, when I did my shows in movie theaters, because there were no big auditoriums in Tel Aviv, so they always waited to the end of the movie, and then my performance came on. There were many times sightings of triangular shapes in the sky.
That's right.
Now, this is very interesting. That did you actually hear about it today, before today's show?
Yes, about 10 minutes before the program began.
That's far out, because maybe there is a connection.
And the reason that we're not saying exactly where it was, we're just saying the southern tier of the U.S., is because we want the FAA tapes, and we're working on getting those now.
That'll be great, but I many times wonder, Art, that is it possible that our powers, our energies, the force that we sometimes have, and I have it all the time, most of the time, it could be that it is coming from an extraterrestrial source. And maybe there is a tiny baby extraterrestrial in somewhere in a UFO in the universe that is playing around with me. And it's, you know, and these trivial, strange abilities that I have are actually triggered by the mind of an extraterrestrial. Now, that is a possibility. I cannot shut the door to the fact that maybe that is true.
There's one more possible truth.
And what is it?
That we are creating, we are manifesting these things ourselves.
Meaning the UFOs, the craft, and the aliens and the extraterrestrials are a creation of our imagination, or is it coming from inner space, from within our brains?
From within our brains, Uri, just like the things that you can do.
Yes, and I agree with you because, remember, in the beginning of the program, I said that I know and I believe that infinity exists. Therefore, infinity in outer space is no end, and in inner space infinity there is no end. And maybe in those inner infinities there are galaxies, there are universes, and some of these crafts come from within us.
Well, I have a lot of calls, and I'd better get to them or I'll be in trouble. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Uri Geller.
Hello, this is Fritz from Phoenix.
Hi, Fritz.
Uri, or better said, Mr. Ambassador, it is such a pleasure to hear you on Coast to Coast on the Adele Show.
Thank you.
And you have single-handedly raised the consciousness of this planet by a few notches back in the 70s when you made your appearances all over the planet. But you are now reaching a new generation, and that generation has very little knowledge with your connection with the visitors. Mm-hmm. So please tell us a little bit about spectra. Your experience in the desert.
Art, in 1972, when Dr. Ander Puharich came to test me in Israel, the American Defense Department sent him through Edgar Mitchell and Hal Puthoff, Russ Targ. It was all paid by the government, the test. And he watched me. At that time, in 1972, I was finished in Israel. I was a superstar from 69 to 71. Because I'm not a magician, Art, I couldn't change my act. And I found myself in 1972 performing in nightclubs. It was awful. I was finished. I was destroyed. And Puharich was sitting there looking at me, and then he called me to his table, and he said to me, "Look, Uri, what I've seen you do, any magician can do with tricks, but I want you to demonstrate this under my controlled conditions." And I liked Andrea. He looked like an Einstein. And during the tests with Puharich, the most incredible phenomena happened. He would put a tape recorder, a new tape. He brought his own Sony tape recorder from the United States.
Yes.
With brand new tapes.
Yes.
That were covered with sellotape. He would peel it open, put the tape in the recorder to tape me. And instead, suddenly, in front of our eyes, and there were some Mossad agents there too who witnessed this, the buttons of the tape recorder would be pressed almost like an invisible hand pushed the button.
Oh.
And a very strange voice would come out.
Oh.
And it would identify itself as spectra, as rhombus. It was so strange. I had very hard difficulty in believing Andrea. I thought he was tricking me.
Uh-huh.
But my relationship with Andrea got more involved. And then he wrote this incredible book called Uri.
Uri, hold it right there.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Could read my love. What a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost. You can't.
to reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
That's who we are, and more. Good morning, everybody. Uri Geller is my guest, and he'll be back with you. And I promise we'll lay into the phones heavily in this segment. All right, we're just about to go directly to the phones, but one very important question for Uri Geller, and that is, I can't let you get away tonight without talking about life after death, whether you believe that we continue, our consciousness as we understand it continues. What happens to us when we die, Uri?
Well, I believe that energy cannot be destroyed, Art. Einstein said that. He proved that.
It is true.
And we all know that besides our flesh and bones and blood, there is something inside our body, and that is energy. I would like to call it our soul, our spirit. That spirit, that soul, survives death. It goes to the other side. And because I believe in God, I would like to feel that our souls either go to heaven or paradise, whatever you want to call it, or our spirit reincarnates into a newborn child, or we turn into angels, or we stay and haunt a place. And those are the possibilities that are waiting for our spirit.
Well, there is one more possibility.
And what is that?
Absolute blackness.
Meaning that life ceases absolutely?
Yes. That the energy does not is not destroyed. Of course it is not, but that it is simply dispersed.
Yes, but, Art, you just said a few minutes ago that sometimes these forces or these visitations come from inside us, correct?
I said it may be, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much can you disperse energy? There will be a molecular, tiny little, minuscule, little energy going somewhere. Where is it going to travel to? Now, it is possible that within that little molecular minuscule point of energy, there is memory that has been embedded into the framework.
Oh, yes.
The fabric of that little point.
Yes.
And that goes somewhere. That will continue to travel in the infinite spaces until it'll find a home.
Well, I believe as you do. I just thought I would throw in that for all the people that would otherwise call and do so. First time caller line, you're on the air with Uri Geller. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I'm calling from Hawaii.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Hi, Uri. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And
thank you.
I'd like to let you both know my watch did start.
Wow.
And I did have the pleasure of working with you on stage once at one of your performances. And
really?
And we did some levitation together back in the 70s.
My goodness.
And
how old were you then?
Oh, I must have been 17 or 18.
Amazing.
Years old.
Can you remember which auditorium it was? Or
yes,
where
it was in Southern California in an area called Oxnard, California.
Oh, absolutely. I remember that.
Anyways, Uri, I have a question. I'm a longtime student and colleague of Dr. J.J. Hertak, and I also had the opportunity to help set up some lectures for Andre Bouhart. So I've been following your work for a long, long time. And I have a question. What caught my ear was your discussion about Israel and how we're going to find a common ground between Palestinians or the Arab brothers and Israel. My question is, the newer work being done in Egypt at Giza and the archaeology going on there and the Egyptology, will we find, if we go deep enough and be open enough, a common bond between both Israel and Egypt, or Israel and the Islamic world, or even even older than that.
Yes.
It's a very
a common bond and not a separation, and this is why it's so politicized in the archaeology going on in Egypt.
All right, sir, hold on. Let's go ahead and ask him. Is it possible that under the left paw of the Sphinx will be found something that would provide that commonality? Casey said so.
You know, Art, I always wanted to find something that will be earth-shattering archaeologically.
Yes.
Years and years ago, Moshe Dayan, who, you know, was the famous general who led Israel into victory, he was an avid archaeological collector. Actually, some of the stuff he had in his garden was taken illegally. And he asked me to locate things for him, which I did very successfully. I know that under the Sphinx and probably within inside the pyramid, there are more chambers. There is more important information to be found.
I believe that, too.
I also believe in the Ark of the Covenant. It's buried somewhere. When we start finding those holy artifacts, then we will understand finally that humanity is one, that we all come from one source. So this is a brilliant question, and I hope that very soon we will find those, let's call it, books of knowledge. No matter what form they will take, they will teach us that thousands and thousands of years ago, things happened on this planet, on our Earth, that were beyond our imagination. And finding them will bring peace to our Earth.
Well, I view it as a kind of a race, Uri, a kind of a race. In other words, the way we're going right now, if we continue unchecked, I think we lose. If something occurs of the magnitude that you're talking about, then I think we win the race. But I'm worried.
I understand. I sense that your fear is about an end of our world. Am I right?
I don't, let me clarify it. I don't think the world that we know, that we walk upon, that shifts every now and then in earthquakes and so forth, will end. The earth will continue. I think the only question is whether we will continue upon it.
Yes. And the tangible fear, Art, is the thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons.
Yes.
That are aimed at cities as we speak. We mentioned it in the beginning of the program.
We did. India, Pakistan, just
let's talk about here, home. There are silos that are loaded with nuclear weapons.
Absolutely.
There are submarines underwater with nuclear weapons. There are airplanes with nuclear weapons in Siberia. There are moving trucks with nuclear weapons.
All waiting to be used.
Yes, and that's why I know that tonight we spoke for a reason. And hopefully you and I and your listeners, with no distinction of importance, we are important on the same level, we will soon focus our minds and be able to neutralize those weapons.
Do you know, Uri, that there was once a book written about something like this? It was called The Jesus Factor. And it simply suggested that at the moment when the buttons were pushed, the weapons didn't work. Not for any technical reason that anybody could ever explain, but the book title should tell you all.
Yes.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Uri Geller. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Hello, Uri.
Hi.
Nice.
How are you?
Oh, very good.
And what's your name?
Good to speak to you. My name is Janice. I'm from Anaheim.
Okay.
Anaheim, California.
Yes.
And I did pick up a clock that I had, a little wall clock. It hadn't been working for months and months and months. So I thought, oh, I'll go ahead and bring it over to the radio. I'm not expecting much to happen. But it didn't even take me to walk over to the radio. As soon as I picked it up, it started working.
Wow.
I can't explain it. I just stood there dumbfounded.
Were you alone in the room?
At the time, I was alone in the room. My two daughters were in their bedroom
What words did you utter when that happened? Did you say something out loud?
And be sure we can air this on the radio now.
Yes.
I didn't say anything. I was just in amazement. I was trying to figure out how did this happen. I didn't say anything. I didn't think anything in particular. I just picked it up. As it was a little clock that I had given to my husband as a birthday present, I believe, a number of years ago. And I don't know if that has any significance to it, but...
But it goes to what I was saying earlier, and that is that the moment you start thinking about this, in other words, she obviously had her attention on this as she was going to it, right?
Exactly.
So,
and by the way, Art, you know that there are thousands of people who are probably trying to call you and they can't get to you.
Oh, I know.
Because the lines are busy. So this is why, if you allow me again, if you get on my website, www.urigeller.com, you'll find my email address, and you can email me, and I will email you back. I'll even send you all a signed picture for me.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, yeah. I'm very dedicated to people who send me emails.
I'll send you an email. I would like to have an autographed picture from you.
Oh, it'll be a pleasure to send you a photograph. Remember, Art, I've been following your career also, and I was not kidding you when I was saying that you are a legend. You are a legend because you have the power to influence millions of people positively. You have no idea how many lives you have changed out there. And come on.
But you know what, though? I know that. But it's, you know what? I found out that it's not something that I can abuse. It's only something that I can sort of ride with. I understand that I have the ability to influence, and I'm not very comfortable with it either, I might add.
Yeah, you told me that.
I'm not at all comfortable with it. But I do realize it's there.
And as long as you let it flow naturally.
Yes.
And I think that part of my success, Art, in my life is because I stayed me, Uri Geller from Israel. I never planned anything in my life. I don't have PR people working for me. I don't have image makers. I don't have managers.
Yeah,
and I don't have agents.
I know, same here.
I just let it happen. And I knew that while my life was going on, I have to give back at some stage of my life what I took away. And that's what I'm doing now. It brings me great satisfaction. And I think you're doing the same thing.
You and I are just about the same age.
Yeah.
And I think that in our careers, we're probably very close. The parallel is very close in our careers, our point of our careers. And
Art, since we're coming to the top of the hour, my last words are these. First of all, I thank you for being so nice to me. You're wonderful. And I thank you.
You're very welcome.
Secondly, I love all your listeners, and thank you, all of you, all across the United States and Hawaii and, I guess, overseas, too. And my last words are, all of you out there, always remember, try to be positive, always be optimistic, believe in yourself, smile a lot, and very good things will come your way sooner or later.
So you create your own reality.
Of course. And you create your own good luck. You create positivity. You become like a magnet.
I have wondered so many times about that. Do you create your own good luck? Or is there predestiny? Or many times I have wondered about my career and my luck, if you wish to call it that. And I've never really understood it. Maybe I don't want to understand it. I don't know.
Well, I look at it this way. We are tiny little humans who are placed in a bottle by the Creator. Inside this little bottle, there is a little space which we can move in. That's our free will. But the bottle is on a river, and the river is flowing downstream.
Right.
We cannot stop that. That's our destiny. That's the way I see life. This is the way I see evolution. And only
God or only the Creator or only that force out there knows where we are destined to end up. Mm. And I think it's the nicest way to finish the program with you, Art.
Well, let me try. We've got just a couple of minutes, and these people have been waiting so long. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Uri Geller. Not a lot of time here.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, this is Diane from Minnesota.
Hi, Diane.
And my watch, wristwatch, it hasn't worked for 13 years, is still working.
Huh.
It was awesome when I put it up to my ear and heard it ticking. I couldn't believe it. And when you instructed to wind it up first, I did that, and I checked. There was no ticking. I have checked this wristwatch on and off. I'm an optimist.
Yes.
Knocked it on wood and stuff to see if it would start. Never did. It did tonight.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Great. Art.
Yes.
Your
book.
Allow me to mention my book again.
It's called, I'm about to demand it, actually.
Thank
please.
You. It's called Mind Medicine. The foreword was actually written by Andrew Weil, M.D., and it was endorsed by no other than Deepak Chopra. It's a fascinating book that will probably change your life and keep you healthy. And the other book that is not mine is a fascinating read, and it will really shatter skeptics. It's called Uri Geller, Magician or Mystic, and it's written by Jonathan Margolis, who is Time Magazine's European correspondent.
That's the unauthorized biography.
Yes, it is unauthorized, but luckily for me...
It was good.
It is a staggering conclusion.
That's really nice to have happen. I've had some people write newspaper articles about me, and when I expected to be slaughtered, instead it went the other way.
Yeah.
There's a new one up there on my website tonight, as a matter of fact, or last night, I think. Really a nice guy who I don't even know who wrote a wonderful article about me. Well, look, your book, what does this book tell you? You said it will help keep you healthy. Is it like a kind of a 101 of how your mind can affect your body?
Yes, I think that's, you put it the right way. It is about putting aside the usual, you know, meditations, confirmations, and affirmations, which I talked about before. It is a book that will really put your mind in touch with your body in a positive way. It's not a miracle book. I have no miracle pill to give you and tell you, take that and you will be healthy for the rest of your life. But if you learn how to keep your mind fit, exercise it, then your body will become healthy. And it's just a great book. And, you know, again, the royalties are going to a children's hospital.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful and appropriate with regard to the work of the book. So you're not getting any of that money, huh?
No, and I told you why, because, you know, I have enough.
I came
to the conclusion that enough is enough, and now I want to enjoy life and write and create. You know, besides writing nonfiction and fiction, my fourth novel is coming out in March of next year, and you can find all my novels on Amazon.com. I also write columns, and I mentioned to you an hour ago that I wrote a column about you in the London Times.
Yeah, I want to read that. I really want to get a copy of it. I haven't read that already.
I either will email it to you or just tell your people to get onto the Times' website
right.
and put your name in the search engine, and it'll bring up the column. So, and you know, that's a very prestigious paper. It's the equivalent to, for instance, to the New York Times.
Right.
And it's interesting how many years ago...
Hurry.
Yeah.
We're out of time.
Okay, I love you.
Good night, my friend. We will do it again.
Love to all of you.
I'm not saying that I love you. I'm not saying that I'll care if you love me.